happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday.
Oh, that's right. We're back here at Sharp Passes Gallery on the 72 bypass in my studio in the back. And, of course, you do know it is cloudy out there, about 66 degrees, supposed to get a high of about 72. But Tim, the price of gold is hanging pretty steady at $16.95. Silver is at $33.60, almost at that $1,700 mark, but a tremendous comeback from where it was just yesterday. So that's a good thing, folks. And today we have a very, very special guest. That's right. You know, we're all talking about getting local produce. We're all talking about knowing where our food comes from. And so I thought it would be great to have Paul Coleman here. He is the owner of Early Bird Farms. The early bird gets the worm. Is that correct there, Paul?
Close. As you can see by my logo, it's the early bird. We've got the worm.
We've got the worm.
That's right. We've got the worm.
That's right, because you raise worms, not only, but
well,
a lot of other things.
We started out just solely Early Bird Worm Farm and started raising worms, but we've kind of spun out of control, and we do so many things, it's just easier to say farms now.
Yeah.
I put less emphasis on the worms and more emphasis on the sustainable agriculture, permaculture, that sort of thing.
Well, you know, that is terrific, and I know, though, that you're not originally from where Shoals, Greenwood, this area. Where are you originally from?
I'm from Venice, Florida, where I grew up. My parents, they lived in New York, and I was born in Far Rockaway, and in 1964, they moved to Venice, Florida, and I was just a small child. I don't remember anything but Florida.
But Florida.
And I spent 31 years there just kicking and screaming to get up here.
Well, you know, Venice, that's a lovely area down there, and I understand that when you started going to school, it was an interesting time for you.
It was. I knew the first day of school that this was not for me, you know.
Now, come on now. Elaborate on this. What do you mean it wasn't for you?
Well, when everybody else, we were sitting in a little circle, and they had the flashcards holding them up going, A, apple, B, and the first thing they taught us was raise your hand if you need to speak. So I raised my hands and I asked a simple question, how long are we going to have to be here? And she said, well, till about 2 or 3 o'clock. And I'm like, no, I mean, how long do we have to be here in school? And she said, oh, you've got like 12 years of this.
And like, how did you feel about that, Paul, at the ripe old age of 6?
I mean, I was heartbroken. I was like, oh, this is going to be a rough ride. You are not going to make it. You're not going to last. So it was miserable for me. I knew...
From
day one, I hated school. It wasn't the learning process as much as being in school. I didn't like that at all.
So what did you do? What did you do? I mean, I understand that you decided just as soon as you could, you went out, you got a GED, and decided to get to work.
Yeah, I just figured, you know, school, I wanted to get out and make some money. I just wanted to get on with my life. I realized I wasn't going to college or anything, and they came out with a GED. And I opted just to take the GED and get out in about halfway through the 10th grade.
Unbelievable.
I mean, I could pass the test, so why not go?
Well,
and I did go back and take a few classes at Manatee Community College. And I did a good many classes here at Piedmont Tech. School is good. It just wasn't for me. And I knew I wasn't going to college, so... You know, when everybody in their high school years was like, well, we got to do this and we got to do that, you know, they really try to prep for those SAT. I never took one. Why bother? I know I'm not going to college.
But you've done very well.
Okay. You know, I've scraped the living out, been happy. My father hauled us around from job site to job site down there. He was a cabinet installer. He had a crew of Ed, Peter, and Paul, and I was the baby. And when,
so is that called child labor, family labor, right?
Yes, it was. It was really slave labor. And we were a well-oiled machine. My father would show up at one of those condominiums, and there would be three installers, and the cabinet shop would drop off 10 kitchens.
Right.
My dad would haul one in and start working on it, and then he'd haul out another set of cabinets and start working on it. And he'd get a third one and start working. And when school got out, he'd pick us up, and we would work. And before long, you know, the Coleman crew would knock out 6 of the 10.
Right.
And that's the way it worked. And
you know, isn't that amazing, though? Today, that doesn't happen a lot anymore. I mean, you know, but I mean, when I was growing up, I mean, my father took me to the to shows and dressed me up in the booth. I had to stand out front there and say, "Can I take your order?" And you know, everybody thought, "Oh, isn't that cute?" So that was his hook. But we just did this stuff. We didn't even question whether we had to or not. We just knew we did.
I don't know how your folks were, but you didn't question my father.
That's what
I mean,
I'm saying.
If you questioned it, you might get the stick or something.
Right.
So, you know, you learned if he said something, he never asked more than twice. There was never a third time. If they told you go to bed that second time, you never got a third go to bed. It was just come in and bam, bam, bam. You know, it was terrible because we had triple bunk beds, and he'd start at the top with the oldest, and I'd be terrified, you know, swap, 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 and somebody crying, and swap, swap. I just knew mine was coming, you know.
Exactly, but that's what I'm saying. We didn't question, and today it's just totally different, isn't it?
It's different. Kids rule the roost today. They really do. I can't believe that, like, well, my generation, you know, we were fairly, could still chase that, you know, had that sparkle of the American dream and chase it. And our kids have become the laziest, you know, really slovenliest, laziest group of individuals. You know, most of them are not motivated at all. They can't see past a video game or the computer. They're soft. Really,
right.
They're soft.
Absolutely.
We were outside. It seemed like it never rained on a Saturday. As long as school, you know, you weren't in school, the sun was shining, you're riding your bicycle, fishing in a creek, doing something. But that computer thing, I remember the first home computers was like a Commodore 64. There
yep.
you go. My
yep.
brother got one, and he was in there plinking around, and back then it just had that little old dot thing, you know, and the only video games were like Pong, and it wasn't, you know, bink, bink, but not very interesting.
Right, exactly.
So he was doing something, and he's doing some programming, and I said, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Oh, I'm making a computer game. This is a tank game, and look, that's a tread. The tread was moving." He probably never got past just the moving tread thing, and I looked at him and said, "Man, look, I hear the jacks are running in the Intercoastal Waterway, you know, let's go fishing." He's like, "No, I'm going to do this." And I'm like, "Man, that is just a fad. That is going to pass." I said,
"Little
you're wasting
did you
your
know.
Time." Yeah, exactly. Another one of my brilliant decisions in life, you know. School,
computers,
There wasn't nothing left except for working with my hands.
Absolutely.
So, I think the internet and technologies has really softened us up.
I agree.
It's changed kids' interest in.
Well, and they're so self-absorbed.
They are. They
yes,
are self-absorbed.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
I think that if cell phone disruption happened for more than, you know, 24 hours or something,
they'd
I
have
believe there would actually be withdrawals like
yeah.
a drug.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're right. Well, we are here with Paul Coleman. We are going to be talking about farming. We're going to be talking about worms. We're going to be talking about a whole lot more right here on WLMA, Meet Me at the Diner. But right now it is time for us to hear a word from our sponsors. If you have a question for Paul, hey, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. You probably have seen Paul out at the Farmers Market behind the Civic Center, and now he's working with the Farmers Market in Uptown Greenwood. So you stay right here with us. We'll be right back.
So right, you can't be wrong. Rocking and rolling.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
We're back here at Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 Bypass. Yes, I'm Ann Eller. Yes, I'm here with Paul Coleman. He, of course, owns the Early Bird Farms. That's right, the Early Bird Farms. He started out with worms. He progressed and added a whole lot of other items. He has chickens, rabbits, sheep, turkeys, ducks, produce, and deer processing. And he brought us a jar of pepper jelly here, which we appreciate very much. And he's also added his own South Carolina produce stand out there. Now, you, of course, were living, what, over in Ware Shoals, weren't you?
That's correct.
Originally.
Originally, we moved from Englewood, Florida, to Ware Shoals, right on the Mill Hill, Circle Street. And we lived there about maybe 3 years before we bought our home out on the highway, out on 25 by the Armory.
Right. Now, just for curiosity, why did you end up coming up here to South Carolina?
Well, my father was born in Ware Shoals. His father was an electrician in the mill, and my grandmother was a seamstress. She went to work in the Regal Mill when she was 9 years old. She had very poor health her whole life. And when my father was 14 years old, his father got electrocuted in the Regal Mill. Yeah, he was working at the steam generation plant during a shutdown, and he got electrocuted. And at the time, my grandmother had about 11 operations and was in a wheelchair. She was actually a morphine addict. Yeah, and my great uncles told me that was the hardest thing they ever did, was get her off a needle and onto some pills and stuff after my grandfather died. By 52, they had moved away, Virginia Beach, Pensacola, and my father ended up as a manager in a Woolworth store in New York. He met my mother, proceeded to, you know, have three children, and in 64, we moved to Florida, to Venice. And we came up in 66, 68, and 69 on summer vacations. And we liked it. We swam in the pool. It was a pretty cool thing. Ware Shoals was a beautiful town.
Regal Mill,
it was picture perfect. My childhood memories, I know everything shines when you think back, but that walking around that mill was like a Norman Rockwell.
Absolutely.
It was like a Norman Rockwell photograph or painting. And my grandparents, as they aged out, they had a house in Ware Shoals, right? My grandmother bought a house right beside of her sister, and we would carry them back and forth, and I would carry them back and forth because they didn't drive anymore. And I would no sooner than drive them up here and then quickly turn around and go back. And about a week or two later, I would hear, "Oh, your Aunt Evelyn, she talked to me so hateful, you know, or whatever. Me and your grandpa ready to come home," which meant come and get me. So I would come and get them. And another week, "Well, we'd like to go back to South Carolina." And I was on the road coming back and forth so much, and the economy was bad. My cousin had said, "You really got to get up here. You know, that recession was raging down there and the construction." He said, "You come up and I won't let you starve. You can work for me. I'll get you a job out at the plant." And, you know, so my wife and I talked about it, and we said, "You know, we really like it up here. Coming from Florida, it used to be beautiful. It was a concrete jungle, crime. It wasn't where we wanted to raise our kids. It had changed
Florida,
so much."
Right.
Yeah. And there was just nothing for us. So we said, you know, we could start a new life up here. And that's exactly what we did.
You
we
did.
Named her Kayla. As soon as we moved up, you know, child number two. And it feels like home.
Feels like home.
It just
now,
feels
what
like
did you
home.
Work? Where did you work when you came up here?
I got a job with my cousin. He owns a pest control service in Ware Shoals. Pest Away.
Pest Away, sure, no problem.
Pest Away, and I work.
We're going to have a lot of bugs, I think, this year because we haven't had a very cold winter, so he's probably going to be in high demand.
He probably already is, because I know enough that when it warms up, termites start swarming, and I bet he's going wide open with termite swarms now. So I did some pest control, and his brother-in-law was the general manager of the Carolina Dye Works. And I got a job there, and they put me in the sample department eventually, and they knew I was wanting to go to Monsanto, and they offered me a job, a pretty good job as a dyer, if I would stay with them. They tried their best to keep me there, and I said, "No, I come up and went to two schools, and I moved 639 miles north to get a job." And I got that job, and, you know, it worked hard, made a lot of money, and, you know,
life was
home.
Pretty good.
Life was really good. But I, you know, I looked at my son one day, and he's like 9 years old, and it dawned on me, wow, he's halfway gone. My kids, I'm working 80 hours a week, you know. Everybody gets out at Monsanto, and if they love overtime, you know, a machine operator back then could make $50,000, $60,000 a year, and, you know, and it was a good job.
Sure.
So make as much as hard as you want to work. So there you go. And I said, I got to do something else because my kids are going to be gone. I'm going to miss it. So I said, what can you do? What can you do? If you could just make $100, you could work a little less at the plant and stay at home. So we cleared some land that we had adjoining our house, and I started row crop farming. And we
thought
figured,
you took a little produce.
You just, yeah, I figured I would just, you know, put a sign out there, beans, 50 cents a pound. Because I look back at life, you know, and I remember vacationing in the mountains with my grandparents. Don't know how they knew these people, but we're going to get some beans. So they drive out to the country, and there's a woman that just sells them off her back porch. She's got a nice garden, and they buy a big bag of beans from her. I said, you know, we could grow beans. I know we could sell produce.
Had you ever done farming before? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I think it was my grandmother was one of those that if she dropped a quarter in the ground, the next morning a dollar would have sprouted.
Okay.
You know, and I guess I get that green thumb from her. And I knew I was destined to be a farmer because my father had to install cabinets in Mobile, Alabama, and in Lexington, Kentucky. They were these dress shops they had to put fixtures in. And I remember I went on the Mobile, Alabama run, and there were fields of cotton. And I stopped, and I got out, and I ran, and I stole some cotton to show
that you've been here
in school,
yeah.
Right, that I had what real natural cotton looked like. And I actually ginned out the seed myself and planted it on the side of our house, and I was like cotton king.
It grew?
Yeah, it grew quite
wow.
well. So we always grew some peppers and tomatoes and things like that wherever we lived, and I always had rabbits. I've had rabbits as far back as I can remember.
Wow.
Rabbits a good source of protein.
Sure. Now, that first garden, though, what happened?
Them deer came out like a buffet, and they must have just smelled that fresh, clear dirt because they come out, and I thought, like, wow, everything's coming up skippy, but then I noticed, like, deer prints walking through, and wherever the deer prints, you know, the vegetables on either side just disappeared. They were cleaning highways. So the game warden come out and give me permission to shoot after dark with six shot, and I come out, had a flashlight taped on my shotgun, and boom, three sets of eyes, and I went, boom, boom, you know, and there you go. And I came out about 30 minutes later, and those shots must be like deer out there in the darkness going, hey, somebody's shooting at people over there. There must be food there. So I came out
come.
In 30, 40 minutes, and there's like six or eight sets of eyes, and boom, boom. By 3 in the morning, I just told my wife, forget it. I can't keep this pace up. I've already expended
the
a whole
deer
box
won.
Of shit. The deer won. What they didn't eat, they broke. And I said, okay, maybe row cropping isn't the way to go. And we've got the river now. The Saluda River is about 2.5 miles below me. And at the time, nobody sold bait.
Right.
And I remembered, hey, I told Lori, my wife Lori, we've been married 27 years. She's probably the only thing that's kept me going all the years, really. Behind every successful man, there is definitely a good woman just pushing him there.
Absolutely.
Otherwise,
I agree with that.
He'd just be sitting somewhere drinking a beer or something, you know.
I'm sure you're right.
So, anyway, I told Laura, I said, you know, maybe I could sell some bait. Maybe if I raise some worms. I said, you know, the lunch lady in the elementary school, she had wooden boxes on the ground underneath all those old live oaks. It was kind of picturesque.
Yeah.
And you would go out there, and when my father would take us fishing to Lake Okeechobee, we would go by the lunchroom lady's house in the country, and she would just dig you up coffee cans full of worms. You'd go out there, she would be on her knees burying scraps from the cafeteria in the beds. And I said, you know, maybe if I grew some worms, I could sell some bait. And, you know, Lori's like,
have you lost your mind?
Okay, you know, there's a big worm crawling out of your head right now, son, you know, okay. So I got on the internet, and I was going to have some worms delivered, and I talked to a man named Steve Blair, Staff Sergeant Steve Blair with the York County Police Department, and I wanted to buy some red worms. I was going to start, and he said, you don't want them, you want to buy these instead. Everybody's swapping to this larger, more premium bait worm. It's called a European nightcrawler or a Belgian red worm, you know. He said, this is what you want. So I bought 4,400 worms and built a plywood box, and it just spun out of control from there. You know, I was successful building, raising more beds, splitting them, raising more, splitting them. And next thing you know, I've got, you know, a trailer a semi-trailer hauled in there, an electric service hooked up to it, built a 2,000-square-foot shed roof off the side of it, hardened concrete, block beds, and I found some people, good people here, local, quality bait service. That would be Larry and Bonnie Gein. Mm-hmm. They started buying cups of worms from me, and I started supplying them for their bait routes. Made a website, got on the internet, started shipping worms. Eventually, I became Mr. Blair's. I couldn't raise enough, so I kept buying from him, and I became his best customer. And Blair said, well, you know, why don't you just buy me out? So I bought all of his equipment and everything in York and brought all of his contacts down and just kept building and expanding and shipping worms. And
the
if you do business,
history.
If you're honest, I have this. If you are honest with people and you are upstanding and you maintain integrity in business, you will not fail. Nothing will kill your business more than mistrust.
Absolutely.
Or somebody walking away with a bad taste in their mouth. As long as you do your best to keep everybody happy and do what you say you're going to do, you're going to succeed. That's the motto right there.
Absolutely. You know? Well, we are here with Paul Coleman. We are having a great conversation. Hey, if you've got a question, if you want to know where he's at, if you need bait, you just give us a call right here, 229-7984. We're going to hear a South Carolina news and a word from our sponsors. Don't you go away.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk radio station.
Back here at Sharp Passage Gallery. We are talking with Paul Coleman here. He has early bird farms now. Yes, he started out with worms. We were just hearing how he started out with worms. You know, the thing about being in business for yourself and having to make it is that you have nobody else you can count on, can you?
No, you don't. You're out there. If you don't work, you don't eat.
Yeah.
And there's no entitlements on capitalism.
Yeah, that's a problem, isn't it, for people? A lot of people have a problem with that, but when you work hard and you produce, and at the end of the day, you can really feel good about what you've done.
You can sure sleep because you're tired. That's for sure.
Exactly.
But I do. I'm proud of everything I do. When I sell a tomato or a vegetable, I look at that and it's like I grew that. You know, you didn't have to go to, you know, a grocery store and get that. This is here.
That's right. And you grow a lot of things out there now.
I grow a ton of stuff now. We really, I have worm castings, which we sell the worm casting. That's probably the most valuable part of the worm.
And what is
it's
that?
It's waste product. It's worm manure, vermicasting. And basically what a worm will do is it will eat organic matter when it's broken down small enough for the worm to eat it. And it ingests it with a little grit and sand, and inside of its gizzard, there's a bacteria that actually breaks down the compost, and the bacteria's waste product feeds the worm.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a pretty complex little deal, but when they make the manure and they convert organic matter into vermicast, it's like a value-added product. The reason it works so well is because it's exactly what God intended a plant to eat. Take your garden, and everybody used to go 10-10-10. That's the rule. Put a bag of 10-10-10 in that garden every year, and you'll grow. You know, everything does well, but it depletes your soil. Your soil just turns into a sand pit. By adding the worm castings, you're adding organic matter back into it, and you're building your soil. If you drop man-made petrofertilizer on a plant, it's going to burn it. You know, that's the biggest fear using fertilizers. If you spread it, it doesn't get rained in or watered in, or if the plant touches it, it's going to burn it up, turn it yellow. It can be a killer as well as, you know, beneficial. The worm castings can't burn. As soon as a root touches it, it uptakes the nutrient. It's instant. It's like glucose on your tongue.
Wow.
And when you use worm castings, you will get 3 times the growth rate and 2x the yield.
And it's organic.
And it's 100% organic. And they actually using worms to reclaim a lot of dirty material, because the worms, for one, will absorb heavy metals. And what they don't absorb, the vermicastings, it inside, they coat it with a polysaccharide that makes the heavy metals unattainable, and the plants cannot obtain and lift up the heavy metals. It breaks the cycle.
Wow.
And a lot of times they'll burn the worms. If they're going to reclaim something, they'll feed it over the worms, and then they'll burn the worms to get rid of the rest of it. It's a good system. But I have a lot of it, and my garden grows great, and I'm somebody that thinks outside of the box, you know. I'm going to give everybody, I hope they're listening real close here, I'll give you the secret of life. The secret of life is this. From the minute they teach you your first thing, they smack you on your hand and tell you no. They give you a set of rules, and they basically tell you your entire life, don't do this, you can't do. They tell you what you can't do. They don't tell you what you can do. You just go out and think out of the box. If they didn't tell you you couldn't do that, doesn't mean you can't do it.
There you go.
You know, think out of the box. So when we raise plants on drip irrigation, quite frankly, when you go down a row and you put a drip line there, the drip line has both sides. So why don't you put onions on one side of it and beets on the other? You can run two crops simultaneously.
But how do you get rid of the deer?
I have little dogs now. I learned the Chihuahua secret.
The Chihuahua secret
is? The Chihuahua factor. And if you pet one today and ignore the others, you keep them jealous of one another.
Okay.
You love everybody, but they're insanely jealous. They're like people. Nobody all piles into the same block, so maybe a couple of them sleep over here, a couple of them go inside the greenhouse, a few of them lay on this porch. So if somebody barks, there is a bunch of dogs at my place packing off the porches, out of boxes.
How many Chihuahuas
everywhere.
Do you have?
Usually somewhere between about 9 and 20.
And the Chihuahuas are keeping the deer away?
Everybody away.
Everybody?
Everybody away. Well, they're very good. You know, they're very alert. Nobody's going to come up my driveway without my dogs knowing it. Nobody's even going to sneak in the back.
So you have an instant burglar alarm.
An instant burglar alarm, because if one dog barks, they all pile from everywhere, and there's like 20 of them.
So the deer have decided not to come calling on you now.
We keep them off pretty good. We do. I'm starting to get a little deer action in the front gardens now.
So the
dog. It happens.
Yeah. All right. Well, now, where exactly is your farm?
My farm is located on Highway 25 North. If you were going from Greenwood towards Greenville, before you get to Ware Shoals and just before the Armory, you'll probably see that crazy guy that's got his whole front yard tore up and planted, and he has selling techniques like produce for sell.
Yeah, big sign out
big
there.
Big sign that's
yeah.
misspelled,
yeah.
You know.
Well, how many years have you been doing this now?
I've been gardening in Carolina since the day I hit it, probably about 17, 18, about 18 years.
But how long have you really had it as a business?
Business, probably the last five.
Last
I've
five.
Been selling produce for about 5 years.
Yeah. And is it satisfying?
It's extremely satisfying. It really is. When people come up and you know that they're going to take those beets home or those onions or whatever, and they're going to cook a meal, and it's just going to be like, wow, this is really good. They're all going to thank mom, you know, for a good meal. And really, mom had nothing to do with it. It was me putting all that love into those products.
And those worm castings, right?
And the worm castings.
But now you sell the worm castings,
too? I do.
How much do you sell? How do you sell them?
I sell them by the pound. They're fairly lightweight, 50 cents a pound, and that is really wholesale prices. They go for $1 or $2 a pound, depending on where you're at. We have plenty of it. People come every day for it.
That's right. And then, of course, you sell the worms, too.
Sell worms, and I sell worm composters, how-to books. We've started many people in their own vermicomposting operations, and that's enjoyable too, because a lot of people, there's a lot of interest in it, enough so that a friend of mine from Byway Farms asked me to join the Whole Foods Upstate Farm Tour program several years back. He figured if he could get some people, you know, more his way, he could draw a better crowd past his place. And we joined up as Early Bird Worm Farm, and we were just smoking packed all, you know, all day. We had like 600 people come. Everybody was, you know, really, it seemed like this was a very popular thing. And we were a very good success on that tour. But when they actually get to the farm, they look around and they see, like, you've got a grist mill. You've got chickens. You've got eggs. You've got broiler production. You've got sheep and lambs. You garden. You do, you process meat. Deer process. Oh, this is my dream. And I chuckle and I say, and this dream is for sale. You know, oh, this is my dream. This is exactly where we want to be. People are looking at that. People are looking to get a small chunk of land and become, you know, hunker down for the long haul.
I think a lot of people see the handwriting
on the walls.
And have you made a good living at it, Paul?
I've made a decent living. Monetarily, it's not the best in the world, but I don't have the expenses that most people have either. 90% of what we need comes off our farm. We produce sheep. I could eat mutton every night. Rabbits for meat production. We do our own chickens, turkeys, Muscovy ducks. We have brown eggs. I produce enough food to feed, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people. We raise mushrooms, oyster mushrooms. We do bedding plants. There's something always going on because I don't sleep much.
You don't sleep much?
My brain won't shut off.
I understand that problem.
The only thing that works faster than my brain is my mouth.
Yeah. Well, we're having a good time talking with Paul Coleman from Early Bird Farms. Yes, he's located right there on 25, headed up towards Greenville on the right-hand side, right before you get to the Armory. We're going to hear a word from our sponsors, and when we come back, we're going to be talking more about fresh produce, and it's getting to be that time where you're going to find a lot of good things out here. So you got to remember Paul Coleman right here. Hey, we'll be back in just a moment. Don't you go away.
Gold dust at my feet.
This year will be a simpler year, one fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love, a diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, 229-6276.
Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 Bypass. Gold is staying right around that $1,695 mark. If you've got it to sell, come see us today. You know, not only do we buy the gold, we buy the diamonds, we buy the colored stones. We pay more if it's in good condition than if it's in meltdown condition. But whatever the condition, we're going to pay the most. Come see us right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We're having a very, very, very interesting conversation with Paul Coleman of Early Bird Farms. That's right. He's located right out there on 25, headed towards Greenville, right-hand side of the road, right up the street from the Armory. And I tell you what, some of the stuff that he does out there, and in fact, all of it, is just amazing that you were able to make the change. Now, how old is your son now?
He's 22.
22?
Yeah.
And you got to spend the time with your son?
Oh, yeah, more than he would have liked, I'm sure. He actually, he helps. He actually helps. He still lives on the property.
Is he in a tent outside?
No, behind the house we live in. We live in the brick house, and there's a huge house behind us. It was built in 1836. It's one of the oldest places around. It predates the Civil War. It made it past the Civil War. Supposed to be haunted. It's a big two-story white behemoth. Yeah. So we have that house, and we just recently acquired the piece of property on the other side of the driveway, and it had about an 85-year-old house that was really just toe up.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of put some old, you know, my thinking out of the box, knocked the chimney off and covered it with old used chicken house tin, just spray painted the weatherboard, you know, sealed it and all. And what we're going to do is, this is kind of exciting for the farm, and it'll probably be the first around. The front part is going to be a farm store. That is the plans.
Wow.
If you want, you know, right next to the house, the state of South Carolina, the Department of Agriculture, put one of their roadside stands there.
Mm-hmm.
So the farm actually can boast certified South Carolina roadside status. Roadside
stands. Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, so that's going to be a real big thing. And you can't serve two masters. And the and my problem with selling produce at home was I had two basic clientels. I mean, you have people that appreciate what you do, and then you have people who would appreciate, you know, a tomato for 50 cents.
Sure.
And unfortunately, you know, if you're paying help or you're doing it, all that work and backbreaking, you can't give your stuff away. And we follow sustainable practices, and we adhere to organic procedures. I haven't had to like break an organic rule in several seasons, but I'm not organic certified. If I had to, I guess I could.
Right.
But see, the thing that, you know, I think most people are starting to realize now is being a modern homestead farm, the food that I sell, the food that I produce, that's the food I'm eating. That's the food I am growing for my own family. So, you know, nobody would poison themselves. I would hope not.
Absolutely.
You know, so we do real good.
But you're thinking you are going to open a store right in the front there then?
In the front area, I would like to open up a store there because, you know, fuel prices and people... You know, a lot of people go to Greenville. The Greenville market's really an exceptional market, and when they're there, I know because they stop by my place to buy things, and I look in the back of the cooler, and there's Happy Cow milk, and there's meat from this farm or whatever. Those people that go out and make an event of shopping all day or shopping for the week and stopping at all their little farms and their little haunts, you know, those kind of people, wouldn't it be nice to know that maybe, this is a dream, this is how I think, possibly with gas going up to $5 a gallon, wouldn't it be cool if maybe I could cut a deal with the Happy Cow and have a dairy case in there and have a limited amount of Happy Cow milk or cheese or something?
Absolutely.
Maybe something from Jersey Oaks Farms. My friend Jay Timms is going to be, he's in the process of becoming certified organic, so... He's raising cows. He has some right now as organic grass-fed. Maybe I can put a freezer in there and sell some grass-fed beef. When people come and they, when people come up and they say, you know, where's the good stuff? You know what I mean? Them big tomatoes or something. It's like, well, everything that's fresh picked today is inside the farm store. You know,
right.
After it's a day. The first day or whatever, I can move it out to the farm stand and use it as an inventory control thing. You know,
well,
and there's
great.
Nothing wrong
that's
with
great.
That, but a lot of people, they'll come up and they don't realize that, you know, you're going to have to pay, you know, more than $1 a pound if you want something that's local or organic. You know, it's unfortunate, but organic and sustainably grown things cost a little bit more to produce.
But you know what? We've all gotten so into wanting to know where our food comes from.
And you should. Oh, you should. Your food today, your grocery store could probably be the most hazardous place that you look at. I mean, you think about this. You go to a town as small as Ware Shoals or, you know, anywhere. Yeah. Anywhere in the United States today, and you pick up the beef. And they have a thing now where they have to list country of origin on there. They're supposed to.
Right.
And it's a big thing now with the codes of how it was produced. You know, if it's got a 9 on it, it's supposedly this. If it's got a 4, if you believe what everybody posts on Facebook.
Right.
Okay. But they have to list a country of origin. When you can go just to a small podunk town anywhere in the United States and look and see grass-fed beef from Mexico, prawns and tiger shrimp from Thailand, tilapia from China. Most all of your produce, if you look at it, the three little hydroponic peppers that's in the bag comes from Mexico. The asparagus comes from the Andes or something like somewhere you wouldn't really think would be shipping food or produce to the United States. The biggest sin America ever incurred was after the Second World War, we came home with the machinery, the technologies, the money, and the fertilizers. The United States could have fed the entire world, and we did not. Now, I used to say within 10 years, but now I'm going to say a lot less, the United States will lose the capability of feeding itself. It's already become. Your foods come from wherever. You don't know what they sprayed. We outlawed DDT years ago, but guess what? They're throwing it down there heavily in Mexico or in China. There's no
worldwide control.
Did you see where the farmers were ticked off in China because they sprayed the growth hormone on their watermelons and used too much, and the watermelons
exploded
in the field? What did they do? They scraped them all up and fed them to the pigs and the fish on the fish farms and the pig farms.
So that
you have no idea what you're eating. That's why I always say, if you know your farmer, you know your food. I mean, really, you need to know the people that are growing your food for you, or at least know where it's coming from.
Absolutely. We need to become more independent, don't we, of outside sources and be able to do it here locally.
Well, we're in a good area because we're very, we were agricultural based. I know we did a lot of textiles, and people think of Georgia as more agriculture and South Carolina's textiles, but we're in pretty fertile ground, and there's a lot of food gets produced here. There's a lot of small farms now. There's some big ones, and they're really great places. They are some giant farms, but there's a lot of small people, and there's a lot of small people producing a lot.
You know what I was impressed to hear? I didn't know this, and this is a little off the subject, and this has to do with a grocery store, but Piggly Wiggly actually has their own, they grow their own beef. I mean, they raise cows and their own beef and everything down there below Orangeburg or in that area. I was very surprised to hear that.
Well, see, that's probably wise on their part. The corporation is cutting out a lot of people in the process,
Sure. Therefore
reaping maximum, dividends for, that bottom line, and that's the trouble. When you go to the grocery store, remember this, though. Your grocery store, everyone, whether it be the Pig, the Bilo, they are all corporations. They're all national chains, national corporations. They have buyers that buy the stuff. And unfortunately, bottom line and dividends for shareholders is the bottom line, end of the game. They're not, if they're going to put the cheapest food from the cheapest source they can get. And that's business.
That is business. We are here today with Paul Coleman. He has Early Bird Farms. Now, if you want to give him a call, that's 942-7566. And you have a Facebook page.
I do.
What's the name of your Facebook page?
Early Bird Farms.
Early
is
Bird
the farm
Farms.
Page. They can look me up at Paul Coleman and see my big ugly mug there, and they can find Early Bird from there, or they can go, I guess, do a search. I'm not real computer literate.
You're not real computer. But no. You've done a great job of taking a situation and turning into something of a great success, and it's been a real pleasure to have you on the show here today, Paul. Thanks for coming out and sharing with us here today.
Well, thank you for having me. I've had a good time.
Absolutely. There'll be a podcast on the web, and we've also done a video, and if you want to contact Paul, 942-7566. That's 942-7566. This is WLMA right here in Greenwood. He's on the web and with a Facebook page, and you can always just drive right up there. He's always working, aren't you?
Yes, I'm always working.
Right there on 25, right before the armory on the right-hand side. It says produce, big sign out there that says produce for sale. Is that
when I have produce for when we're actually open for produce? Yeah, there's probably more people would know the bait signs, live bait.
Live bait.
Yeah.
So if you need good bait, if you need to fertilize those plants, hey, come out and see Paul right out there at Early Bird Farms. Thanks so much for being with us today, Paul.
Thank you for having me.
All right. This is WLMA right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.